Okay, so tonight we're going to be finishing up the last topic in Malacha Shein Tzrich LeGufa, and the next week we're going to move on to our next topic, which is going to be the qualification of Mekalkel. So that's where we start next week. Okay, so today's discussion actually begins with a parsha in Chumash. We get the parsha Shlach, so that will be the tonight's a good, mishmar shir for Parsha Shlach. So we begin our discussion in Parsha Shlach. The Torah there brings the incident with the Mekoshesh Eitzim. The Mekoshesh Eitzim was an individual in the Midbar who was Mechal the Shabbos. He gathered wood. The exact malacha is up for discussion. Which malacha he did in particular, it might have been Kotzer or Ma'amir. Whatever he did, he was Mechal the Shabbos. And they, as the Torah tells us there, they put him into the Mishmar, they put him into prison to see what exactly to do with him. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu instructed Moshe Rabbeinu that he should be subject to the Misa of Skila, that the Mekoshesh Eitzim should die through Skila, and that is what they did to him. So that's the incident in Parsha Shlach. Now, there are two sources in Chazal that tell us that the Mekoshesh Eitzim actually acted L'Shem Shemayim. He didn't have sinister intentions. He had noble intentions. He did it for positive purposes. One source we find in Chazal is the Targum Yonasan. Targum Yonasan on that pasuk tells us that the Mekoshesh Eitzim, the reason he did it was because he wanted to teach Klal Yisrael the repercussions for violating Shabbos. The Klal Yisrael knew Shabbos was a mitzvah, but they didn't know the exact repercussions for violating the Shabbos, and he wanted to teach them the repercussions for violating Shabbos, so he was Mechalel Shabbos to teach them what happens when a person is Mechal Shabbos. That is what the Targum Yonasan writes on the Pasuk. So that's one noble kavana for this Mekoshesh Eitzim. The second source in Chazal, which tells us another positive reason, another noble intention for the Mekoshesh Eitzim why he was Mechal Shabbos, is brought down by Tosfos and Bava Basra. Tosfos and Bava Basra on Kuf Yud Tes and Aveiz brings a medrash, which gives the following rationale for why he was Mechal Shabbos. The Medrash says that this incident took place right after the Maisa of the Meraglim in the first year in the Midbar. It's in Parsha Shlach. Shlach begins with the Meraglim and then brings this incident with Mekoshesh Eitzim. And the Medrash says it was in chronological order. And as the Medrash says, after the incident with the spies, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu had proclaimed that the whole generation is going to die out in the Midbar over the next 40 years, so Klal Yisrael mistakenly thought that that meant that they were exempt from Tariq Mitzvos. Now, to us, that sounds like a funny notion to be exempt from Tariq Mitzvos. But if you appreciate the fact that, you know, we've been keeping Tariq Mitzvos for thousands of years, but they just got Tariq Mitzvos a few days ago, a few weeks ago, a few months ago at Har Sinai, and they thought that the deal was that, you know, we're under Hashem's good graces that we have Tariq Mitzvos, but they thought that they blew it, and therefore the contract is torn up, and they're not subject to Tariq Mitzvos. That's what the Medrash writes, with my elaboration there. So the Medrash, the Mekoshesh Eitzim wanted to teach them that they're still bound by the Mitzvos, and so it was Mechal Shabbos to show them that it comes to the full repercussions that were presented in the Torah. So those are the two noble intentions that we find in Chazal for why he was Mechal Shabbos. The Targum Yonasan telling us that he wanted to teach them the Halacha, what are the repercussions for Chil Shabbos. And we have this medrash brought by Tosfos and Bava Basra that he wanted to teach them that they were still bound by Tariq Mitzvos despite the fact that they had messed up at the Chet HaMeraglim. Yeah. Did you see Rav Chanan? Okay, Penny just asked the kasha from Rav Chanan in the Mar Makomos discusses Penny's points. I don't want to elaborate on it. But I think I put Rav Chanan on our comments. But yeah, so okay, excellent point. But it's gonna get too complicated. So fine. Comes along the Marasha in Bava Basra, and the Marasha raises the following kasha on these two sources that say that he acted with noble intentions. Marasha is bothered by the following question. It's on the spot, on that Tosfos in Bava Basra, and on that sugya, on Kuf Yud Tes. So the Marasha asks as follows. He says, how could the Mekoshesh Eitzim possibly justify doing the grievous Avera of Chil Shabbos for these two purposes? Okay, he had certain noble intentions for why he did what he did, but how could he possibly justify this grievous Avera of Chil Shabbos for these two reasons. The ends don't justify the means. Now, if you would have asked me this question, and had it not been the Marsha, I just would have answered that, you know, this is the human condition. People come up with twisted ways of thinking, and they come with rationalizations. And his thought process was, I'm going to take one for the team in order to convey these messages. That's probably what I would have answered to this question. But the Marsha understood that when Chazal say he acted l'shem shemayim, that means that there actually was a certain degree of nobility in his actions. There was actually some righteousness in what he did. And so therefore, the Marsha says that there has to be a better explanation for what was going on. It's not tenable, apparently, to say that he simply had a misconstrued cheshbin, that he actually, there must be some nobility to what he did. But how could that be, asked the Marsha, how could we possibly justify Chil Shabbos for the sake of teaching these messages to Klal Yisrael? That's the kasha of the Marsha. So the Marsha answers that as follows. He says that, he gives a brilliant analysis of what the Mekoshet Hesem did to answer his kasha. He says that we're going to answer this question based on the principle of Malacha Shein Tzrich L'Gufa. Our first qualification we've been learning about the last two and however many minutes in tonight's sheer weeks, that we know that there's a when you do the Malacha in Shabbos, so we basically paskin like Rabbi Shimon, that aside from doing the act of one of the 39 Malachos, you also have to have the right purpose. You have to do it for a certain specific purpose, which we discussed. If you do it for the wrong purpose, then you're going to be Pater. Says the Marsha that when the Mekoshet Eitzim did whatever malacha he did, let's say it was kotzer, he cut the wood from the ground in the midbar. So says the Marsha, this was a malacha shenitzricha legufa, because he didn't really fundamentally want the accomplishment of this malacha. He didn't really want the wood to be severed from the ground. He just wanted to teach a lesson to Klal Yisrael, whether the first shot or the second shot, he wanted to teach them a certain lesson. And so therefore, that's a malacha. He didn't fundamentally want the accomplishment of the malacha. He was going through the motions of the malacha for an external goal of teaching a message to Klal Yisrael. And therefore, it's a malacha shein tzrich legufa. Now, what's the halacha when you do a malacha shein tzrich legufa? So nowadays, we say that on a deraisa level, it's okay. Midir rabbanan, it's aser. It's potter abul aser midir rabbanan. And that's nowadays. But back in the time of the midbar, before the derabbanans were enacted, so it was technically perfectly permissible. He didn't act that looked like Chil Shabbos, but he technically didn't do anything wrong. There was no Issa Deraiso. It's Ein Tzrich L'Gufa, was for the wrong purpose. There's no Issa Derabbanan. The Rabbanans weren't enacted yet. It was perfectly permissible. So between him and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he did nothing wrong at all. It looked like he did an Amalacha, but he did nothing wrong at all. However, relative to the Klal Yisrael perceiving what he did, relative to Beis Din Shalmata, so he did an act that had all the trappings of Chil Shabbos. They gave him Hasra, the two Edom warned him that you're going to be chayv skila, and he accepted the hasra. He put on an external display of doing the malacha. He accepted the hasra, and so therefore they had to subject him to the rules of the Beis Din Shalmata and put him to death. And so he came up with this brilliant cheshbon for how he can do an act that's perfectly permissible, but still get the messages across. The whatever message you want to get across, you got across. That is the cheshbon of the Marsha, how we can maintain that he was a perfect tzaddik. He did nothing wrong, and he accomplished his goal. That's how the Marsha answers this question that he poses on these two chazals. Yeah.
First of all,
Ben is asking that the Tzarech Nisa was a Pandora's box last week. I should have saved it to the end of the sugya, so he can't ask from that. Ben is asking, we saw last week that Tzarech Mitzvah should make something into Tzrich Legufo. So is this called Tzarech Mitzvah? So maybe we'll say that it's not one of the 613 mitzvahs. It's a good thing. Yeah, okay, fine. Benny, I'll see you. Ben wants to ask, why is it not an Aver Lishma? Is that basically what I was trying to say? It was an Aver Lishma. I was wrong, but I think Ben's asking are you saying to make it Tzrich Legufo? Okay, fine. Everyone wants to make this Tzrich Legufo. Okay, fine. Okay, I hear the Nakuda. Interesting point. Danielle.
I guess, when do external motivations ever matter vis-a-vis malacha? Like, let's say I take a branch off a tree because I want to scratch my nose. Like, who cares that I want to scratch my nose? I wanted to break the branch off the tree. I intended the malacha for its purpose. So, like, why does it matter?
Are you... Sorry, I'm just trying to make the volume higher.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
Can you hear me better now?
I'll repeat it for everyone else. You're, to repeat your question, you're asking, Lamaisa, every time you do a malacha, you might have a certain specific reason, but at the end of the day, you're doing the malacha. So right. Here too, he was doing the malacha. Is that basically your question?
Yeah, so that's a D'oraisa right there.
You're asking that he really wanted to do the malacha. Every time you do a malacha, I'm breaking the branch off to scratch my nose, you're saying. So at the end of the day, whatever my reason was, I'm doing the malacha. So here too, I'm doing the malacha. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Because that's exactly what we're going to get into right now. Good. But let's just, Yonah.
We're using that as the reason why really what he did was noble. But is a person allowed to sacrifice?
Okay, so Yonah's asking suicide. He basically, it's kind of like a halachic suicide. Method of suicide. So I hear the question, maybe we'll next week, suicide and halacha. I don't know. You know? Well, cutting edge side of this here. I don't. It's an interesting question, but yeah, no. So the Dov is questioning the Hasra. So they said to him, you're violating the Shabbos. He nodded his head, accepted the Hasra, and he did the malacha. In his brain, in his heart of hearts, he was thinking, I'm really just trying to teach them something, and therefore it's in its real gufa. Let's move on just because Daniel's point is where we're headed, and I think it's kind of itching everyone in a certain way. So that's the Marsha's cheshbon of what took place in this whole parsha. Now the Achronim, there are some Achronim that are bothered by this Marsha. The earliest one is the Shol Meshev. He's a very respected Achron, and more explicit is Rav Asher Weiss in the Minchas Asher. So I'm going to focus on more on Rav Asher Weiss just because he's more black and white, but you find these issues already creeping up as early as the Shol Meshev. Rav Asher Weiss and Daniel basically asked the following question. They say that, listen, it's true that when the Mekosh HaShetzim, began his cheshbin, so the starting point was, I don't really want to do malacha, I just want to teach them a lesson. But in order to accomplish that goal, that requires you to do malacha. In order to teach them a halacha, to teach them what happens when you violate the Shabbos, you need to violate the Shabbos. So it's true that his starting point was not really wanting malacha, but that led him to need to do the malacha. So what do you mean this ain't tzrich laguva because he doesn't want this malacha? In a certain sense, he does want this malacha. It's true, he starts out wanting to teach them a lesson, but to teach them a lesson, you need to do the malacha. So how are you saying that this ain't tzrich laguva? Maybe there should be a regular malacha tzrich laguva, which would be also deraisa, and we'll have to give a new answer to this question. That's the question that Rav Asher Weiss asks on the Marsha. Now, obviously, the Marsha wasn't bothered by this question, so let's just analyze the point of contention in this machlokas, because this is going to be very yisodistic. We're having a shaila here in the Achronim now. Was the Mekoshesh Eitzim doing a malacha atzrich l'gufa or malacha she'en atzrich l'gufa? Chazal tell us that it was a term Shemayim to teach certain lessons to Klal Yisrael, and because of that, he did this malacha. Marsha is contending that it was ein atzrich l'gufa, that it was not usher at all back in the day. It was perfectly fine. Whereas Rav Asher Weiss is now questioning, and the Shalom Eishiv are now saying, is it so clear that that's in Tzrich Lagufa, when at the end of the day, to accomplish that goal, you need to go through to do the act of the Malach itself, maybe that should be considered to be Tzrich Lagufa. So let's now just analyze for a few moments now, what's the point of contention in this Machlokes? So it's going to really come down to a Hakira in how to assess a person's purpose in doing a Malacha. As we've been discussing for the last 2 weeks, the yesod of tzrich l'gufa is that when you do a malacha, aside from doing the act of one of the 39 malachos, you also need to do it for the right purpose. Now, the question becomes, how do we assess a person's purpose? What do we look at when we're trying to gauge a person's purpose in doing a malacha? And Rasha is holding that we look at your underlying motivation. What was the underlying cause that sparked you to do this malacha? Is it stemming from a desire to do the malacha itself? Or is it stemming from some external purpose? What was your underlying motivation, your underlying reason that instigated you to do this malacha? And so therefore the Marsha is saying, when it comes to the Mekosh HaShetzim, since his underlying motivation was not really to get the accomplishment of Malachas Kotzer, he didn't really want this piece of wood or whatever the malacha was, it was just to teach a lesson to Klal Yisrael. So therefore this is called in Tzrich LaGufa, it's not being done for the right purpose. So that is the sheet of the Marsha. We assess Tzrich LaGufa based on your underlying motivation. Rav Asher Weiss is trying to contend that we don't look at your underlying motivation. What we look at is your current intention when you did the malacha. When you did the malacha, what was your current intention? Were you intending to do the malacha itself, to perform the malacha? Or were you still intending for some extrinsic purpose? Were you just going through the motions of the malacha for some external purpose? What was your current focus when you did the malacha itself? And so therefore, Rav Ashi is saying that it's true that the Mekoshesh Eitzim started off doing this malacha to teach a lesson to Klal Yisrael. But in order to teach them this lesson, he had to do the malacha with, you know, and do the actual act of the malacha itself. And so there is a certain intention, his current intention in doing the malacha is to actually do the malacha itself. Therefore, it should be considered to be tzrich l'gufa. So we're just trying to define the two sides in this machlokes. We're not going more conceptual. We're just trying to pin down what's the point of contention. They're arguing over how do we assess a person's purpose? Do you look at your underlying motivation? What was the cause that sparked you to do the malacha? Or do you look at what was your current intention in doing the malacha itself? When you actually did the malacha, after you're motivated to do the malacha and you did it, were you still focused on the malacha itself, or are you focused on some other purpose? So that's all part one to tonight's chabura. We're setting down some basic principles. We're analyzing a very basic issue. How do we assess a person's purpose in doing a malacha? So we started out with the two reasons in Chazal, how the Mekoshesh Eitzim acted L'Shem Shemayim. We had the Kasha, the Marishah. How can you justify doing Chil Shabbos? How could Chazal call him, you know, someone acting L'Shem Shemayim with righteousness if he didn't act of Chil Shabbos for these purposes? Marishah is trying to say it's Ein Tzrich L'Gufa. We look at your underlying motivation. His underlying motivation was not to do malacha, was to teach a lesson to Klal Yisrael. Whereas Rav Asher Weiss is arguing that maybe it should be called Tzrich L'Gufa. We don't care about your underlying motivation. When you did the malacha, were you focused on the malacha, or were you focused on some external purpose? Okay, yeah, Ben. In order to teach a lesson to Klal Yisrael, you need to do malachas kotzer. So at the end of the day, he wanted to do malachas kotzer. He wants the wood because he wants to do the malacha. Like, what comes first, the chicken or the egg? I'm saying he wants the wood to teach them a lesson. Teaching them a lesson means doing kotzer. Kotzer means wanting the wood. So he starts out not wanting the wood because he just wants to teach them a lesson. But after he teaches, in order to teach them a lesson, he needs to want the wood. He has no use for the wood, but he has the use for the wood in order to teach them what happens when you want the wood.
He doesn't have use for the wood as fire.
This is like really philosophical. This is getting very philosophical here. Yeah.
So, because you're always going to have to do the malacha in order, that's not the original purpose, but then you can always have to do it.
Right, but so, okay, so you go Benathan, or what's your last name? Stevens, I'm sorry, Steven. Mr. Freeman. So Mr. Freeman is asking, so anytime you have a malacha, she'en tzrich l'gufa, at the end of the day, you're doing the malacha in order to, right. So let's just take a classic case of an tzrich l'gufa. We had when you dig the hole for the sake of the dirt. A classic case of Enes Rech is where you dig a hole for the sake of the dirt. Now, in this situation, again, the malacha, let's say, is bona. The accomplishment of the malacha is making the structure in the ground, which is malacha's bona. Now, what's my motivation? What's motivating me to do this malacha? To get the dirt. I want to make a sandcastle. So my motivation is to get the dirt. And even when I do the malacha itself, when I go through the motions of the malacha, I'm still intending to get the dirt. Both my motivation and my intent is to get the dirt. My starting point is to get the dirt. When I'm digging, I'm not thinking about the hole, I'm thinking about getting the dirt. So in a typical case, both your motivation and your intention are both not focused on the malacha itself. As opposed to this paradox of Mekoshesh Eitzim, where he starts out not wanting the malacha to teach a lesson, but to teach a lesson, you have to do the malacha. So what do you focus on? The starting point to teach a lesson, or the fact that he needs to do the malacha to teach the lesson? So that was a very good question. I think we should, Ellie, then we'll. Right. Okay, so that's a very good question, but it's too complicated. Excellent question, though. Okay, fine. So let's move over now to part two. There's a major nafkamina in this machlokes, which ultimately is going to have tremendous halacha lemaisa ramifications. So let's do the nafkamina, and then we'll go through how it plays out halacha lemaisa. The question that the Rishonim wanted to deal with was, what's the halacha if a person does a malacha on Shabbos out of yira? Let's say a person is afraid of an assailant. An assailant coerces him to do malacha, or I'm going to subject you to yisurim. I'm going to subject you to pain, to annoyance, discomfort. Now, obviously, once again, if a person is, if his life is on the line, if he's being threatened on pain of death, so pikuach nefesh is docha Shabbos, obviously he would do the malacha, and that's perfectly permissible. But we're not discussing a case of pikuach nefesh. We're discussing a case where a person has a certain fear. He's afraid of Yisurim, let's say, that if he doesn't do this malacha, he's going to be subjected to pain. And so he's doing the malacha to avoid pain. What's the malacha? If you do a malacha to avoid a disturbance, you're doing it out of Yira. So I put in the Marmakomos, there's a machlokas and Rishonim on this between Tosfos versus the Maharik. Starting with the Shita of Tosfos. Tosfos is in Shabbos and Bez and Bez. And Tosfos says that this is a full-fledged bona fide malacha. That when a person does a malacha out of fear, at the end of the day, he did the malacha. And so this would be a regular chi of deraisa, full-fledged violation of whatever malacha he did. That is the opinion of Tosfos. Comes along the Maharik. He doesn't quote Tosfos by name, but he says something that all the later Mefarshim felt went up against Tosfos. The Maharik writes that really if a person is coerced into doing a malacha, if let's say an assailant coerces him to do a malacha and therefore the Jew does it out of fear, it's going to be pater. It's not going to be usher deraisa. It's only going to be usher derabanan because it's the malacha she'ina tzricha legufa. That when the Jew is doing the malacha, he doesn't fundamentally want the malacha to be done. He's just doing it to avoid the attack of the assailant. And therefore, it's a malacha she'ina tzricha legufa. He's not doing it for the right purpose. It is pater. So we have now a machlokas rishonim. If a person does a malacha out of yira, because he's afraid of some assailant, and he does the malacha, what's the din? Tosis is saying it's a full-fledged bona fide violation. It's obviously not in its richla gufa. You have the right purpose. Whereas the Maharik is saying that it is in its richla gufa. It's only aser derabana. And I'm sure as everyone can see where we're headed. So this is the Pnei Yeshua points out that this is going to be connected to our machlokas. Let me do the plug-in and then Daniel will take your question. So the Pnei Yeshua says that this would be connected back to our machlokas between the Marsha and the Cholkim. He connects in the Marsha to this issue. So let's go through the two definitions. If you go with the first sheet, so let's say the Marsha's definition for Tzrich Laguf, how do we assess a person's purpose? Says the Marsha, we look at your underlying motivation. What was the original point that sparked you to do this malacha? What instigated you to do this malacha? Is it stemming from a fundamental desire to do the malacha itself? Or is it stemming from some external purpose? So working with that understanding, says the Pnei Yeshua, we should say that it is Ein Tzrich Laguf if you do it out of fear. If a person is coerced into doing a malacha, his starting point, his motivation is not to do the malacha. His motivation is to get away the assailant, to avoid the assailant, and therefore would be a malacha she'ni tzrich legufa. And so that's the pshat behind the Maharik. Maharik, we said that this is only asher mid'rabbanan. He is understanding that we look at your underlying motivation. What sparked you to do this malacha? What sparked you is not a real desire for the malacha itself. Therefore, it is only asher mid'rabbanan. However, Tosfos, but let's go over to the second definition. If we go with Rav Asher Weiss's argument that we shouldn't look at your underlying motivation, but we should focus on your current intention when you did the malacha. After you were sparked to do the malacha, when you did the malacha, what was your intention? Was it to do the malacha or was it not to do your malacha? And at the end of the day, the person needed to do the malacha in order to avoid the fear. Let's say he's doing the malacha of Bishul, so he needs to cook this food and make sure it tastes very good in order to make sure that his assailant doesn't give him lashes. And so at the end of the day, when he cooks this food, let's say, he's intending to do malacha special to make sure it tastes very good, to make sure that he's not going to be subject to Yisurim. So Tosis is holding, like the Shita of Rasha Weiss now, or it's obviously in reverse, but that's how we're presenting it, that we look at your current intention, and therefore this would be a full-fledged, bona fide malacha. So we're in part two now of tonight's shir, and we're setting up an afkamina here. If a person does a malacha out of fear, is that considered to be tzrich legufa? Would that be aser midaraisa, or would that be aser midarabana? Yeah, Daniel.
So I don't understand. Is this a Mishnah in Shabbos and Bamim Adlikin?
Sorry, I just can't hear you so well.
Isn't this I'm just trying to understand the case. Isn't this a Mishnah in Shabbos about in Bamim Adlikin about, you know, if you cut off a nair because you're...
Okay, so Daniel, as opposed to a lot of other people who just are mavatel between Mincha, Kabbalah Shabbos and Maariv on Friday night, so Daniel actually says Bamim Adlikin, and he's asking, isn't this a Beferish Mishnah in Bamim Adlikin? So you should know that the Gemara does bring this up on that Mishnah. I don't know if you did the Gemara, but you're absolutely right. The Gemara, the Mishnah discusses putting out a fire for the sake of listim. Let's say you're afraid of listim, so you put out a fire. And the Gemara brings up the issue of Tzricha L'Gufa on this very sugya. So you're 100% on the ball. I just don't want to over-confuse those of us who don't say B'Malikin. Okay, fine. Now, this Nafkamina is going to now play out in the Shaila that we presented in the email of doctors seeing Goyish patients on Shabbos. So we're now going to move over to this Shaila that comes up, and we're gonna go through the Shaila properly. So let's just start from the beginning. So we're now discussing a practical application of this Nafkamina. Ravadia Yosef in the Ibia Omer was asked the question, what is the halacha when it comes to Jewish doctors rendering treatment to non-Jewish patients on Shabbos when it comes to malacha d'araisa? Can a Jewish doctor do a malacha d'araisa to non-Jewish patients on Shabbos? That's the question that was posed to Rav Avadia. So let's go through Rav Avadia's analysis of this Shaila. The Shaila begins with a Gemara in Avodah Zarah. So we're going to move over now to Gemara in Avodah Zarah on Daf Chafav Amud Aleph. Once again, we're analyzing the Shaila. Can a Jewish doctor render treatment to a Goyish patient on Shabbos? That's the question. So the Gemara of Avodah Zarah on Daf Chafav raises the following question. Wants to know, can a Jewish doctor help deliver a Goyish baby? If a non-Jew is pregnant, let's say, and they're going to give birth, so they come to the Jewish doctor for help, can the Jewish doctor help deliver a non-Jewish baby on Shabbos? And as we're going to see, there's certainly Yisurim involved in delivering a baby. And so the question is, can the Jewish doctor help deliver the Goyish baby on Shabbos? So the Gemara has a back and forth between Rav Yosef and Abaye on this issue. Starting with the Shita of Rav Yosef says that if the Goy offers money to the Jew, then the Jew should and can deliver the non-Jewish baby. Why? Because if the Goy would not offer money to the Jew, he would just ask for a favor. So then the Jew has a very good excuse. The Jew could say, listen, I'm sorry, but I only render my services for payment, and I don't take your insurance. And so therefore, I'm not playing games here. Even for a Jewish patient, I only work for insurance. And the Goy would accept that argument, and that's perfectly permissible. But if the Goy is offering to pay money, so now the Jew has no excuse. The Goy is offering to pay the Jew, and the Jew is still, he's being biased to his own religion here. He's not willing to treat the Goyish patient. Says Rav Yosef, that is going to generate Eva. Eva is hatred. Eva is animosity. If the Jewish doctor refuses to render service to the Goyish patient, it's going to engender animosity between the Goyim and the Jews, and therefore it is permissible. So that is Rav Yosef's statement there, that if he's offered money, the Jew should deliver the Goyish baby. Fine. Comes along Abaye, and Abaye argues on Rav Yosef. Abaye says that we cannot permit the Jewish doctor to render treatment to the non-Jewish patient because there's an excuse that the Jewish doctor can give to the Goy to avoid animosity. The Jewish doctor can give the following argument. He can say that I'm only allowed to violate the Shabbos if I'm doing it for someone who's Shomer Shabbos. Because if I violate the Shabbos for someone who's Shomer Shabbos, then in the net gain, in the long run, I'm saving many Shabbos observances. But I'm sacrificing one Shabbos for many Shabbos in the future. That is something I can do. When it comes to someone who's not Shomer Shabbos, who's not Shabbos observant, so then I cannot violate Shabbos for his sake because I'm not netting Shabbos observance. That is what Abaye says you should tell the non-Jewish patient. I'm sorry, but this is my this is how my religion works. I can violate the Shabbos to save more Shabbos in the future, but for you, I'm not saving more Shabbos. Therefore, it's not permissible. So that's the back and forth between Rav Yosef and Abaye. Rav Yosef said that you could deliver the Goyish baby to avoid hatred. Says Abaye, we can get out of the hatred. There's a good excuse that they'll accept. Give them this excuse about Shmir Shabbos, and it will not be a problem at all. You have a question? Yeah, I'm gonna ask. So the question being posed is, what if we have non-observant Jews? It's a very good question. I don't think we're going to have time to get to it. Ravadi has an unbelievable analysis of that. I think it's going to be too much. Yeah, Ellie. Ellie is asking, is this talking about a case where the only doctor around is an observant Jew? So we're discussing a case where the goy went to the Jew and he asked this Jew for help. If the Jew feels that there are more doctors around, he can get out of it. Obviously, there's a certain degree of case by case. You know, we have to assess a case by case and see if there are other doctors around, he can get out of it. But we're just telling us certain basic principles right now. So we're just telling us the basic principles. Yeah. So Pinny's asking, will Abaye's excuse fly? So Abaye obviously felt that his excuse would fly. Let's go through this again. The Chemer doesn't like Abaye's excuse. We'll try it on the security guard downstairs. Let's see what happens. let's go in order. This is the Gemara. We just did the Gemara. Fine. Let's go in order. Okay, fine. Now after the Gemara comes, are we showing it? Comes along Tosfos, and Tosfos and Avodah Zarah makes a monumental qualification to this piece of Gemara. Tosfos says like this. He says, what's going on in this Gemara? The Gemara is telling me that in principle, if you can't give an excuse, we're going to permit delivering a baby on Shabbos, doing Yisurim on Shabbos because of hatred, because of Eva. Certainly, we don't want the Goyim to hate us. We don't want animosity. But how can we possibly allow a violation midaraisa to avoid Eva? The delivering a baby on Shabbos involves Yisurim midaraisa. Tosis there classifies it as gozes. He feels that it fits under Malach of gozes. There's an Isur deraisa to deliver a baby. How in the world can we permit a Malacha deraisa to avoid hatred? That is Tosis's kasha on this Gemara. It's getting a little late, so I just want to make sure we finish. Fine. So that's the kasha of Tosfos on this Gemara. So Tosfos makes an unbelievable limitation to this piece of the Gemara. Says Tosfos that you're right. We would never permit a Malacha deraisa to avoid hatred. The Gemara is only discussing issues midrabanan, as Mefarshim spell out. We're not discussing an Issur deraisa. We're discussing a point in the labor where there's no longer an Issur deraisa, where there are only issues midrabanan. That's the discussion in the Gemara. When we have an Issur derabanan and the goy is asking for help, should we waive the Issur derabanan and tell about the goy? That's what Rav Yosef is saying, that if there's animosity on the table, we'll waive an Issur derabanan to avoid animosity. And Abaye is saying that we can get out of the animosity, give him my excuse, and there won't be animosity, and you cannot waive the Issur derabanan. So that is Tosis' qualification to this piece of Gemara. And with that, we've now seen the primary sources. We have Abaye and Rav Yosef, again, they're back and forth on delivering the goyish baby. And now Tosis is making qualification that we would never permit an Issur deraisa to avoid animosity. The only discussion was by an Issur derabanan. And so what comes out of learning up the primary sources in this sugya in Avodah Zarah is two basic principles. We see two basic principles in the primary sources. Principle number one is that it is not permissible to violate a malacha deraisa for the sake of Eva. To avoid animosity, we would not permit a malacha deraisa, that is explicit in Tosfos. When it comes to a derabanan, so we would waive a derabanan to avoid hatred if there is a derabanan. But if there's no derabanan, if there's no hatred, we would waive a derabanan to avoid hatred if there is hatred. But if you can get out of the hatred, if you can give a bias excuse, so then there's not going to be any hatred, and we would not even waive an issur derabanan. So this is how Rav Avadia starts out his tshuva. He says it's not looking so good right now. That if the Jewish doctor wants to render treatment to the goyish patient, we have an explicit sugya telling us that on a deraisa level, we can never waive a deraisa to render treatment to a goy. And even on the rabbanal level, Abaye is telling us the excuse to give. You have to give them this excuse, and we cannot even waive an issur derabanan. And the Mishnah Berurah actually brings this down la halacha. He says that in his days, which is not such a long time ago, there were Jewish doctors that were performing malachos deraisa to treat goyish patients, and it is inappropriate. Says the Mishnah Berurah, he passes like this halacha, that it is not okay. The Jewish doctors cannot do malacha deraisa for the sake of the non-Jewish patients. Fine. So the question becomes, how to be malamed zchus on what seems to be the minhag olam to be mekel on this issue? So what is the basis to permit the Jewish doctor to render treatment to the goyish patient on Shabbos? So Rav Avadia comes up with two arguments to be mekel on the Shaila. His first argument is based on the Chassam Sofer. The Chassam Sofer had to deal with the Shailas already in the 1800s. And the Chassam Sofer says as follows. He says, as people are intuiting, that in his days and probably before his days, but already the degree of animosity is at a much higher level than the Gemara is apparently conveying to us. That nowadays, and nowadays in his terms means the 1800s, So the animosity is at a level of pikuach nefashos, that if we trigger the hatred of the goyim upon the Jews, so that can lead to a pogrom, it can lead to absolute pikuach nefashos. It is 100% a real serious issue, much more severe than the times of Chazal. And aside from the general wave of anti-Semitism, says Chassam Sofer, there's also a very specific analysis, and that is retaliation. If the Jewish doctors don't see the non-Jewish patients, then the non-Jewish doctors are not going to see the Jewish patients. So there's going to be retaliation. If the Jewish doctors are not helping to see the goyim, they're going to retaliate, and then the sick Jews may not get the treatment that they need. Therefore, it has reached the point of pikuach nefashos. And says Chassam Sofer that in his days, Abaye's argument would not fly, that the goyim wouldn't accept the whole Shmir Shabbos argument. And so therefore, if push comes to shove, if there's no way out of it, he would be willing to be matir a malacha deraisa to avoid this heightened level of animosity. I just want to finish up because of the timing. So that is the first argument to be made on the Shaila based on this Chassam Sofer. Then Rav Avadia comes up with a second argument to be made on the Shaila. The Rav Avadia says that we can come up with an argument to permit the treatment of the goyim on Shabbos based on our Marsha and the Marik. Because as we learned from the Marik, the Marsha, that if a person does malacha on Shabbos out of yira, he's afraid of repercussions, he's afraid of unpleasant consequences, that's a malacha shen tzrich l'gufa. He's not doing it because he fundamentally wants the malacha, he's going through the motions of the malacha to avoid a disturbance, that is only asr midirabana. Well, says Rav Avadia, if we have a Jewish doctor who's a Yarei Shemayim, and he doesn't really want to do malacha on Shabbos, he's just doing it because he's afraid of the repercussions, the legal repercussions that will ensue, that will occur if he doesn't take proper care of the patients. His supervisor, he might not keep his job for a long time. He's afraid for his Jewish brothers for retaliation. He has a lot of cheshbonos for why he's afraid that if he doesn't do the malacha, there'll be repercussions. We can say that this is going to be a malacha shenitzrich legufa. Just because of timing, I need to make sure we finish. It's going to be a malacha shenitzrich legufa, and therefore is only aser midirabanan. And once we downgrade it to a derabanan, so now there's much more of a basis to be makel, because it came out of the sugya of Avodah Zarah that for hatred, we certainly can waive iser midirabanan. And so when the Jewish doctor is doing the malacha on Shabbos because of these external purposes, he doesn't really want to do malacha. He's just doing it because he's afraid for his Jewish brothers. He's afraid for pikuach nefashos. He's afraid of getting fired. For all these purposes, it's only aser midirabanan. And so that would be a second basis to be makel. However, says Rav Avadia, this second heter is controversial because we saw that the Tosas argued in the Marit. Tosas held that if you do a malacha on Shabbos out of yira, it is aser deraisa. Tosas held that we don't care about your underlying motivation. If at the end of the day, you did the malacha with intention to do the malacha, that is aser deraisa. So the second heter is a quasi heter. It's something. There's a tzad to be makel, but it's not an absolute heter. But in combination, says Rav Avadia, there's room to be makel on the shaila. That based on the Chassam Sofer, who's saying that there's a heightened level of anti-Semitism, and taking into account the Marik, the second argument, so says Rav Avadia, one can be makel on the shaila. And he dramatizes it based on the fact that I'm sure we can all appreciate that with modern technology, so there's a much bigger deal. You know, one small perceived misstep in the Welt, in the world, will immediately get blasted all over the world, will be branded a scandal against the Jews, and, you know, it'll be posted all over the world. So with the click of a finger, there's much more on the line nowadays. And so the Chassam Sofer's argument becomes much more of a serious deal. So Halach Lamaisa Rav Avadia Paskins, that Me'ikar Adin, it would be permissible for the Jewish doctor to do Malacha Dereza for the Goyish patient. But he emphasizes two points. First of all, the Jew should certainly try his best to get out of it. And he's talking in Eretz Yisrael, where there are a lot of Jewish patients. He says that ideally they should try their best to operate on the Jewish patients rather than the Goyish patients if they can get out of it. This is a very big deal that, you know, if we're being materi from the Reisa, and a person has to realize that to whatever extent they can get out of it, they should get out of it. And his second point, which again is probably not so realistic in America, but maybe in Eretz Yisrael would be more realistic, he says that they should also try their best to do malachas in a manner of Shnayim She'asu. Shnayim She'asu is where, let's say, Reuven is able to do a malacha all by himself, and Shimon is able to do malacha all by himself. But despite the fact that they can both do by themselves, they do it together. They together do the malacha b'shutfis, despite the fact that they're both fully capable of doing it by themselves. So that'll downgrade the severity of the malacha. So says Rav Avadia, if they could do the malacha in a manner of Shnayim She'asu, so they should do so. So that is Ravadi's psak on this issue. Just to reiterate the disclaimer, which I forgot to make this year, which is please don't paskin off the app. Ask a competent local Orthodox rabbi for paskining. But just going through the sugya, that is how Ravadia analyzes the shaila. The Shmir Shabbos, just to tell you his psak, he brings down that for the rabbanans, a Jewish doctor can do the rabbanans to avoid isura, to avoid the eva, to avoid the hatred of the goyim. But when it comes to the raisas, ask a rab, he says. He doesn't want to write in the sefer, you know, Ravadia, I guess, you know, was willing to put his money where his mouth was, but the Shmir Shabbos, he doesn't want to put that in the sefer. He says, ask a rab for what to do in such a situation. So with that, we've concluded our first topic here in our Thursday night Chabura, the sugya of Enes Rich Lagufo. We did it for 3 weeks. Let's just quickly do a 60-second recap. In part one of today's shir, we had the whole sugya with the Mekoshesh Eitzem, the two reasons why he acted L'shem Shemayim, the Kasha, the Marsha, that how could we call him a righteous person when he didn't act Chol Shabbos? Marsha is contending that it was Enes Rich Lagufo, that it was perfectly permissible. Rav Asher Weiss and the Sholem Eishiv were questioning if it's really in Tzrich Lagufa, and we just tried to just pin down the definitions there that Marsha is saying you look at your underlying motivation, whereas Rav Asher Weiss is saying if your motivation is causing you to do the Malacha and you're intending to do the Malacha, that's called Tzrich Lagufa. And then in part two, we had our Nafkamina in this Machlokas, what if you do a Malacha out of fear? You're afraid of some repercussions, so you do the Malacha. So this is a Machlokas Rishonim Tosas versus Marek. Tosas says that this is Aser Deraisa. Barik says that it's a malacha, shenin tzrich lagufa, and Pnei Yeshua says it's connected to the marsha. Do we look at your underlying motivation, which is not to do the malacha, or do we look at the fact that you're now instigated to do the malacha because of that motivation, and so you are intending to do the malacha? And we showed how this played out in the sugya of doctors doing seeing goyish patients on Shabbos. We started at the sugya there, but with the two basic principles and primary sources, you can't do any malacha deraisa, and you can't do it derabanan if you can give an excuse. But if you can't give an excuse, then you can do it derabanan, but not a deraisa. But Ravadi came up with two arguments to be makel. Argument number one is the hatred of the chasam sofer, that nowadays it's reached a new heightened level of eva, touch such that it's pekuch nefashos. And argument number two is that maybe it's in tzrich lagufa, that if we take into account the arnaf kamina, doing a malacha out of fear for repercussions, well, this Jewish doctor who's Yerai Shemayim, he's only doing it because he's afraid of the repercussions, and therefore it would be in tzrich lagufa. And I should mention that the Ravadia emphasizes in the Psak Halacha at the end of the whole Shuva, he says that I permit this Iker, then assuming the Jewish doctor is only doing it because of the repercussions. Assuming the Jewish doctor is doing it because he wants to save his brothers, to save the Jewish brothers, to make sure that they get proper treatment for the Goyim, and he's doing it to avoid repercussions, then you can be make on the Shaila. So Imamish, he's taking into account the second argument, Halach Lamaisa, I apologize, I guess we have 2 minutes left, so we'll stop here just for a quick question, then we'll stop. Yeah. But if I don't like it, I'm going to blame it on Marv. Not like it. I'm thinking if I can't answer it, I'm going to blame it on Marv. Ben is asking, can the Jewish doctor be concerned for the outcome of the patient? Saying, as long as they see me doing treatments, like, who knows what I'm really doing? You know, like, I'll give them a fourth COVID shot. You know, like, no one's going to know the difference. I think that Daniel, if you would agree that it's probably not a good idea that, you know, with people looking over your head to not do things properly. Don't pass me on the app, but it would seem to be appropriate to do it properly to avoid Eva. Yeah. Oh, Ben's asking, does it have to disappear if you want this person to live? He's a nice Gentile. He's my next door neighbor. Okay, so it's an interesting question. We'll have a lot of interesting questions over the Zingas. Shkoyach for joining us. Daniel, you have a last question?
Just regarding the Marsha, how would you ever be chayav the Oraisa, according to the Marsha, when always there are generally external motivations that don't line up with the Malacha.
Daniel is asking, if I'm asking correctly, he's asking, according to Marsha, if you look at your underlying motivation, when do you ever really want the Malacha? Does a person ever want to be Chayiv Stila? I'm always having some reason for doing something. Is that your question?
I don't know if it's that per se, but it's just there's always going to be some divide between the external motivation and the Malacha itself. They want to do the Malacha, but it's because of some other external motivation. So how can you ever be Chayiv the Oraisa?
I'm just going to repeat it quickly and I'll just give a 30-second answer, but then we're going to stop. If you're not satisfied, we'll talk on the phone. But I just to try to answer your question, according to the Marsha, in a general case where, let's say, a person cooks some food on Shabbos, he does Malacha Special, and he wants the food. Wanting the food means I want the accomplishment of Malacha Special. I didn't realize you're not allowed to cook on Shabbos, or I didn't realize that you can't heat up soup on a hot plate, let's say. You know, so it's a hot plate with a blech, so it's permissible, right? So the person didn't realize that it's not permissible, so he puts his food on the hot plate on Shabbos. My motivation is to get this food cooked. That's why I'm doing this. I want to have this food cooked. Having the food cooked means I want to do Malacha Special. That's what Malacha Special is. So in a typical case, when a person does the Malacha, his motivation is to do the Malacha. I'm doing this because I want to cook this food on the blech. If you're not satisfied, then we will. I'm happy to talk on the phone. Thank you for the questions. Okay. They raised the level of Chabura. Shkaich.
Shabbos, thank you.
Shabbos.